And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. We speak with a lot of nonprofits on this show, mostly local nonprofits, because Kodiak seems to run on the lifeblood offered by those charitable and non-governmental organizations. Our state annual fair is our annual state fair is a nonprofit. Our hospital, our public radio station, senior citizen center, animal shelter, and so on, and so many support organizations like the Kodiak Public Library Association and health and social service related organizations such as Kodiak Kindness, Kodiak Area Mentor Program, and Brother Francis. And even just a couple weeks ago, the Kodiak Community Foundation and other organizations put on a downtown block party that exposed our community to the numerous nonprofit and volunteer and charitable opportunities available to us. And that shouldn't shock us, because Kodiak has over 10 nonprofit organizations per capita in Kodiak, and it's the highest concentration of nonprofits in the state, and as far as I know, it could be the United States. But you know, we've never really taken a step back to understand how nonprofits work on this show, and well, how to start one. There's always room for more, because we find that the public need to fill those support gaps, you know, that need is not going away soon. So if you're interested in starting up your own nonprofit, charity, volunteer organization, if you're curious about how they even work, then this is the episode for you. So to help us wade through nonprofit development is our guest for today, Michelle Wetzel. Michelle has worked in the nonprofit arena for more than 20 years, and she's interviewed more than 60 nonprofit experts for her number one best-selling book, So You Want to Start a Nonprofit, Now What? It's a great title. She has used this expertise to help start up and launch small nonprofits, help them find that path to success. And Michelle has set up charitable organizations herself and has served on more than a dozen nonprofit boards. And as a result of her experience, she started up Your 501 Guide Nonprofit Services, which you can find on 501guide.com. That's quite the intro. So welcome, Michelle. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And where are you calling from right now?
Right now I am in Key West, Florida, in sunny Key West. No hurricanes, even though it's hurricane season.
That's good. And we were talking, you're the complete opposite side of the country.
I don't think we could be further apart.
Right. So, I'll just tell our listeners that you're not in Alaska. You're not from Alaska. You hope to visit Alaska one day. But we're still glad to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
So in your talking points, you mentioned that there are more than 1.7 million charities in the United States alone. One example you give is in Delaware, there's roughly one charity for every 1,000 people in the state. And as I mentioned, Kodiak Island has about 10 times that number, and it's probably even more. According to GuideStar, there are about 120 nonprofits operating in Kodiak, but that's not including churches, Alaska Native organizations, other all-volunteer groups. It doesn't include state and national organizations that have operations here, such as Red Cross and Special Olympics. So when you heard that Kodiak has an exponentially large number of nonprofits, what did you think about that?
Well, I think that maybe they can use my help. I'm actually from Delaware, which is why there is the Delaware statistic there. And because there are already so many charitable organizations in your state, my state, the country, they're all competing for dollars and volunteers and board members and even clients. So I wrote this book partly to help people who want to start a new nonprofit think a little harder about whether or not they should start a new nonprofit. I know people come into it with, very good intentions. They have noble ideas and they're passionate about their cause, but there may be other options. And if they do choose to start a nonprofit, I can help them. I can help you do it.
So was there something, I mean, you have quite a resume of nonprofit experience. Why do you have such an interest in the nonprofit world?
Well, it started somewhat organically where I would, you know, help volunteer for my children's schools, and my kids are both in their 30s now. So that those days are in the past, but it just went from joining one nonprofit board to and joining another and gaining experience. And my background is in finance, so I was treasurer of every neighborhood association I've lived in. And so I just volunteered a lot.
I've served on a few boards, and we always look for that finance person. You know you're going to be the treasurer at some point.
Right.
So then what inspired you to write the book? I know that I've published the book, so I know that that takes a lot of work and a lot of time. So what was your inspiration for it?
Well, I had gained all this experience. I worked on boards that I felt like they became adult organizations during the time that I was on the board, you know, where they implemented policies and procedures and the correct governance that they didn't have before. And I learned all of that process. And I thought that I would like to share that with other people.
So, without giving right too much away from the content of your book, talk to us about that. Why someone should start a nonprofit? Maybe somebody who's listening is certainly thinking about it, but why should they pull that trigger and get started on it?
Well, once you've done your research and you have determined that there really is a need in your area, a hole that isn't filled, that you feel uniquely qualified to fill, then you should start a new nonprofit and help those people in need. You know, the government can't provide for everyone, and there are diseases and things that people want to help get information out about or prevent other tragedies from happening. And I totally understand that, and you should seek to help those people.
So as they're putting what are the basics, I guess you would say, of putting together a nonprofit plan? You know, a nonprofit's not a business, and right when you're starting up a business, we expect you to have a business plan. But is there something similar to putting together a nonprofit plan? You talked about research and making sure there wasn't a duplication of services.
Yes. So in my book, I list 10 must-haves for a successful nonprofit. And here they are. You need an unwavering commitment to your cause. And as I mentioned, filling an unmet need in a unique way in your area. Doing your research up front to ensure that there is a need. Create a business plan and run it like a business, because it is a business. Even though it's called a nonprofit, you're running a business. So you need to know how to do that and put together a great diverse board of people who are passionate about your cause. Find funding sources before you begin, if possible, and always continue to search for new funding sources. You need time to dedicate to your passion project, because this may take more time than a part-time job. Rely on a good support system, your family, mentors, other professionals. Be adaptable and have an ability to delegate, because you can't know it all and you can't do it all by yourself. And the board needs to run the charity. Now, the board that you put together is the organization that runs the nonprofit. So you, as the founder, now are one vote on a board, but you aren't necessarily running it. It's the board running it. So you need to put together the right board, and they need to be transparent and run it ethically and have, you know, fiduciary responsibilities. So those are my 10 must-haves.
I'm writing them down furiously. there's a little pause
in the
pause. Yes, that's true. Yeah, that is very true. And what are in your experience in mentoring people who are starting up nonprofits? In your own experience, what are some of the common mistakes that people make?
Well, especially when a founder is passionate about a project and they're required to put together a board, they may be thinking that they could put together a board of just people who will go along with them and say yes to everything that they mm-hmm. want to push through. And the board should not be all yes men. They should, you know, have their own independent thought processes and vote their conscience for the best of your, you know, the doing the best that they can for the organization. So sometimes the founder will find him or herself wishing that they had all yes men.
Sure.
Have a diverse board. It will probably be a better nonprofit in the end because people ask the hard questions and maybe think of things that the founder and their close allies might not have thought of or don't have the experience with.
Yeah, I can definitely see how it would be. Like me personally, I haven't started up a nonprofit. Yes, I'm thinking about one, but like there's always something like, oh, we should start up a group to help that. We should start up a group to help with that. But I hadn't really thought about that. I don't know that ability to give up that power.
Right.
You know?
And that is, I think, the hardest thing, because you start this and put your all into mm-hmm. it because you are very passionate about it, and you go into it organizing it and putting it together, and then all of a sudden you're only one vote of maybe 10 and not the overall dictator.
Mm-hmm. Have you, you mentioned, you come from the world of finance, and you mentioned having a business plan. And I think I remember reading that you said at one point wrote that that running a nonprofit is probably more difficult than running an actual business.
Yes, it can be. and you might want to think about, you know, before going to all the trouble of creating a corporation and applying to the IRS for 501c3 nonprofit status, you may want to think about other options that you could do instead. You could just join a board or a committee of an organization that's doing the type of work that you're interested in, or run a program under the umbrella of an existing nonprofit so that you don't have to raise all the funds for the operating costs and the staff and all of the detail work, and you can just do your passion project, or, you know, just run a program under another umbrella. Or you can start a for-profit company and use some of the profits to support a cause that you believe in. Or with that for-profit company, you can apply for B Corp. That's B as in boy, capital B, Corp certification. And that's not a type of corporation. It's a certification that any corporation may apply for. And that type of corporation is driven by profit and mission. So something like Bombas that donate a pair of socks for every pair of socks that someone purchases, that's a B Corp model. So they are helping people, but also earning a profit.
What
so there are other options that you can do instead.
Is there a special tax designation for B Corps, or is it really just more of about how it's organized?
I believe it's just, I don't know a lot about them, but I do believe that it's just a certification that you can apply for, and it's just, you know, part of your mission as a for-profit company.
You mentioned that one option instead of starting your own completely brand new independent nonprofit is to actually run your idea as a program under the umbrella of an existing nonprofit. I think that's a really powerful and kind of novel idea, especially for Kodiak.
I was going to say, especially for how many nonprofits you have there, some of them might need help with programs that they just don't have the staffing for, but they know are needed out there. And if you have that program that you can run for them, they might be willing, and you might even end up joining their board.
Which would not be a bad thing.
Right.
Yeah. So let's see. Tell us about some of like your success stories. I think there was one in your talking points about Sean's house.
Yes. So I am on a board of an organization called SL24 Unlock the Light Foundation, and it is named after my good friend's son who took his own life at age 23, 5 years ago. And my friend Chris and his family started a nonprofit because they just wanted to get the word out to young people about the importance of talking about their mental health and getting help for any issues they may have. So they started just talking to student groups and church groups and things in the area. Then it branched out to the Dover Air Force Base, wanted them to come and speak. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years ago, we opened Sean's house, which is an actual house that his son Sean lived in college and with his friends. And we've now turned it into a 24-hour go-to place. It's open 8 to 8 every day, but there's someone there at night also in case there is a crisis situation. But students can go just have a cup of coffee and a cookie. They can do their homework there. They can borrow books from the library there. They can get help from a peer counselor. And the community has gotten behind this organization like I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. It's existed for only 5 years, but everyone knows that the need is great and that the help that these kids are getting is really important. And so people have really gotten behind it in donations of meals for student athletes to come and just not be a student athlete for a night, because that's a lot of pressure.
For sure.
And, you know, just donations for the labor on fixing up the house and all that kind of thing.
So what was it, do you think, about this particular project that really kind of galvanized you and the family and the community about this?
I think part of it was the mission and who we were helping. And the importance of that. And part of it was that Chris and his family put together a fantastically diverse board of people with great connections in the community, and business people and young people who were his son Sean's friends, who are now, you know, just barely in the working world. And I think it's just the best combination of all of the things that it's just really worked well and grown.
And so I'm sure for every success story, you have one that didn't quite work out.
I do, unfortunately. I've had to dissolve two nonprofits. One was something that I was working on, and it had just lived its useful life, and it was time to shut it down. Another was a friend of my daughter's who had started a nonprofit, and she put together a board. We got it up and running. You know, all of the pieces of it were together within 4 months, which I think is pretty unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And then she was a young mom with a full-time job and a husband. And she was, you know, we were looking to her to run the meetings and do all of the startup, and she just didn't have the time to devote. And it hadn't gotten to the point where it was a standalone that could run itself. She, as the founder, needed to set that pace, and she just couldn't do it. So, mm-hmm. unfortunately, we had to shut that one down because it was just eating up the few dollars that we had raised to pay for the website and, you know, bank fees and things like that. So it was time to shut that one down.
What are some of those warning signs that kind of indicate that it's time to dissolve a nonprofit, to shut one down and move on to another mission? You know, what goes into that hard decision?
Yeah, so I believe that your board every year should take a look at how things are going. You know, are we still relevant? And if not, is it time to shut down? Or can we pivot to something that is relevant? It takes a lot of insight and thought, and you really do need to take the time to do strategic planning and make sure that your future makes sense. Mm-hmm. And if not, it may have outlived its useful life, so maybe it is time to shut it down. It can be sad, but it's sadder to me if it keeps going.
Sure.
And it really shouldn't.
Speaking of pivoting, you were in the thick of the nonprofit world during COVID and during the shutdowns. How did you see the nonprofit industry? How do you feel about its health coming out of it?
I haven't seen a lot of negative effects. Delaware did a great thing where the Delaware Community Foundation just quickly went into action and started raising funds and put together just a sort of a standalone quick board of people to determine which nonprofits needed money to keep going right now, mm-hmm. and, you know, that were still operating. And it was an amazing model that really worked. I don't have a lot of knowledge about other states, mm-hmm. and how they did everything, but in Delaware, they really did a good job, and I think most have recovered well. So,
we have just a couple of minutes left, and so I want to give you a time to talk about this one thing that really piqued my interest: this 15-day Create Your Best Nonprofit Challenge. What in the world? Sounds great.
Well, so if you sign up for my 15-day challenge, the weekday, the first weekday after you sign up, you will receive an email. So it'll be 3 weeks of, you know, 5 emails a week. And each day you will have your assignment and go from zero to a structured nonprofit within 3 weeks. And of course, you won't have your 501c3 status because that you have to wait on the IRS for that. But, you know, you will have applied and you will have, you know, set up your website and gotten your URL and things like that. So your domain name and incorporated and gone through the thought process of the important process of naming your organization, because I feel that's probably one of the most important things that you can do.
Oh, for sure. And I think most nonprofits in Kodiak have the word Kodiak in there somewhere. We're so proud of our place. So proud of it.
But then they get a little mixed up, maybe.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. When you have 60 nonprofits that all start with the word Kodiak, it's really hard to search.
Right. I would imagine.
But
so the next, when you start yours, name it something other than Kodiak.
Right. Exactly. thanks so much for joining us, Michelle. I've been talking to Michelle Wetzel, author of So You Want to Start a Nonprofit, Now What? And which you can get on Amazon. And I've been talking about having you on, and so I know a couple of people have already ordered your book. And also you can check out Michelle's stuff on 501guide.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
And you can join us on listen to us on Talk of the Rock next week. We'll be joined by John Campbell. He's author of Beyond the Fading Memories, Guiding Words for Dementia Caregivers. And he'll be talking about music therapy for dementia patients. And so that's next Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on KMXT. Thanks once again to Michelle Wetzel for calling in all the way from beautiful Key West, Florida. We appreciate you.
Have a nice rest of your day.
All right, you too. And thanks for listening.
Thanks.